This podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chaz. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show.
And all guns should be Glocks, all Glocks should be 9mm and Model 19. A generation 4 or 3.
Hello everybody, I am Bob Main, and you're listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop, and this is a practical show done by a practical guy. I'm not ex-law enforcement or ex-military or a gunsmith. I'm just a dude that is a family man, I'm a salesperson, and I'm a husband, I'm a dad, and I'm a liberty-loving, freedom-loving American that firmly believes in my Second Amendment rights. And so I pick up this microphone once in a while and I tell you what I think. And I try not to get too opinionated, but I just give you my everyday guy's point of view. This is, like I said, I think it's episode number 384. I am in the Handgun World mobile studio, going on a business trip, going to make some sales calls in the big city of Houston, Texas. In case you don't know, South Texas, San Antonio is my home. Well, I'm going to talk about emails. I don't do this very often on the Handgun World podcast. I don't talk about emails much. I normally respond to voicemails, but I've had some very good emails come in lately that I think are really worth talking about, and so you're going to hear about it. Real quickly, I want to mention the Self Defense Radio Network. As you heard in the intro, this podcast is part of the Self Defense Radio Network. That's the new network that Paul Lathrop and I formed, and you're going to get a lot of good benefits by listening to network podcasts. They're coming. We're working on some things. It'll give us about another month to have everything wrapped up, and you, the listener, are going to get some good benefits from advertisers on the Self Defense Radio Network. So far, the shows that are on the network are the Polite Society podcast, Paul Lathrop and the gang there, and the Gun Blog Variety podcast. That's a good one you might want to listen to. Armed Lutheran Radio with Lloyd Bailey. And I've been listening to some of his. I really like Lloyd's Midweek Meditation podcast. Sean Sorrentino is the host of the Gun Blog Variety podcast. Liberty On Point. Not only are they on point, but they're also on the Self Defense Radio Network. Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns and Politics Daily. Those are some good podcasts you might want to listen to and check those out as well. And I'll be talking about some more, and we're going to have an official kickoff and, you know, kind of an official grand opening of the network. But check those out. You can find them all at selfdefenseradio.net, selfdefenseradio.net. All of the podcasters now are probably putting their episodes on that website. The website's up and running. You can see a list of all the participating podcasts, and we put our episodes every time we come out with a new one on that website, or you can get us all through iTunes or whatever kind of podcast app that you use. Okay, so the first email that I want to get into and talk about comes from one of my listeners named Brian. And he basically was commenting on my interview with Paul Lathrop that I hope you've listened to by now, where he tells his entire story. And one of the things that Brian admits in this email, he says, you know, it was a very poorly conducted investigation. And I think everybody agrees that it was a very poorly conducted investigation, but he brought up a good point. He says, I have to say that Paul's trainee, His use of the one-finger salute probably got the ball rolling down the wrong path. And Brian says, I didn't mention it on the interview. I didn't mention it on the interview because I wanted to give Paul as much time to tell the story as to what happened without actually starting to dissect all of the details. Maybe Paul might be willing to come back on at a later date and start dissecting all the details of it. But yeah, I would say that instead of de-escalating the situation, the one-finger salute probably escalated it. And that probably shouldn't happen. Because I've talked about de-escalation a lot here on the Handgun World podcast, and I believe in it very much. So yeah, that probably didn't get things started off on the right track. And Brian, that's a very good point. So Brian, thanks for emailing that to me. I've had a lot of people either put up comments on my website, handgunworld.com, or on Facebook about why doesn't Paul file a civil lawsuit against his false accuser. You know, it's not for me to say. All I did was interview Paul. He's my friend, and he's my co-founder on the Self Defense Radio Network, and he's somebody that I enjoy listening to his podcast. I don't know. You'll have to ask him. I'll tell you what I would do. You have to understand that, you know, civil lawsuits cost a lot of money, and they're a lot of headache. And you have to think about Paul's situation. He's just gone through a tremendous amount of headache and heartache, not knowing how his life was going to turn out with these felony charges against him. So I would say he's probably a little bit burned out about it right now. That's just my guess. That's just, again, it's just speculation on my part. And I'd be kind of a little bit burned out about it, you know, too. So, and I mentioned that coming up again a little bit later in this episode, because the next segment that you're going to hear was actually pre-recorded before this segment. That's just kind of my gut feeling. All right, another email I got is from another listener in Virginia. And he said that an interesting question came up at a firearms lecture. An individual asked about using non-lethal rounds, in other words, like rubber shot, for the first shot because they didn't want to hurt the assailant. He said his response was that legally it's difficult to justify the use of a firearm because you're not an imminent threat of serious bodily harm or death if you're not using lethal force. And I think that's a good point. I'm not a big fan of doing something like loading less than lethal rounds as the first round in your gun, no matter what gun you're using. Look, folks, if you draw your gun, it's because you believe beyond the shadow of a doubt that your life is in danger and that you are in danger of either death or grave bodily harm. And not until then do you draw and present your gun to the other individual. So if it's gotten to that point, you better use lethal force. Would you agree? If it's gotten that bad to where that gun's got to come out of your holster, and that muzzle is pointed towards the bad guy, I would say that you better be prepared to use lethal force, and it better be lethal force. So, for civilian concealed carry, I don't think that's a good idea. And I appreciate that email. That was an interesting question. I've never had one a question about that come up before. So, those are a few emails I wanted to cover. Again, if you want to send me an email, Bob@handgunworld.com is the best way to do it. Bob@handgunworld.com. If you want to call in a voicemail, I get a lot of those from time to time. That number is 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. Before this segment concludes, I want to talk about a real good article that I saw. And I can't remember the name of the person right off the top of my head. I'm driving, so I'm not going to open up my iPhone while I'm driving. I'm not going to be doing that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to start searching for it just so I can tell you what the guy's name is. Go to the show notes for this episode. Go to the show notes for this episode, 384. And there will be a direct link to the information that I'm about to talk about. But he has built a Glock 19 for IDPA CCP division, the concealed carry pistol division, the newest division that's about a year old at IDPA, for guns that are more suitable for concealed carry. Because as we all know, the likelihood of these giant race guns being carried in the holsters of their owners is pretty slim. Okay, I'm not saying impossible, but come on. I've personally witnessed this after an IDPA match several years ago. The shooter had a really tricked out race gun, 1911. Big one. Nice one. Cool gun. And then when the match was over, he wanted to conceal carry off the range while he was leaving, because obviously he believes in carrying, which is good. He's deciding to carry. Okay? But he carried a Glock 26 off the range. He didn't carry that big race gun off the range, that big 1911 he was shooting. He carried his Glock 26 off the range, because that's probably his primary carry gun, or one of them. So, IDPA came up with the CCP, Concealed Carry Pistol Division, for guns, you know, that are like a Glock 19, and there are others that are similar in size that would fit into this division. So, this gentleman talked about the Glock 19 he's building, or has built, and he wrote a nice blog with excellent pictures. So, please go check it out. I did put it on my Facebook page. So if you follow me on Facebook, if you follow the Handgun World podcast on Facebook, if you don't, why not? Please follow me on Facebook. Like my page. And then you'll see all kinds of information that I normally post about my shows and things like that. And I really like this Glock that he built up for competition. And when I looked at it and I read through it and looked at all the pictures and all the products and everything, I realized, you know, I've already done some of what he suggests to one of my Glock 19s, one of my Gen 4s. Like a Wilson Combat Barrel. That's one thing that he has decided to do, which I've got. And if you look at the grip job, if you look at the stippling and the undercutting of the trigger guard and everything that he's done to his Glock 19, and you compare it to the pictures of mine, because I put mine on the Handgun World podcast Facebook page as well, the grip job is almost the same. So I've got those two already done. He's put a good magwell on it. I like it. And it's not a real obtrusive magwell. Some magwells are just, you know, giant. I like what he says. It's kind of like if you stick a coffee cup on the bottom of your grip of your Glock. Seriously, some people's magwells look like that. Looks like they stuck a coffee cup at the bottom of their pistol. This is not. This is very... It's a good magwell, and it serves a good purpose, but it's not big looking, and I'm sure it still fits into the IDPA box. He put a real nice flat trigger on it, which I'm going to... I haven't figured out which one yet. I might try the one that he suggests in his article, which I can't remember the name of. Sorry, folks. I wish I could spit out the names of these, but go to my website, handgunworld.com. Check the show notes. But it's a nice flat trigger. Looks good. Says he's got a 3.5-pound connector in it. I've actually got some extra 3.5-pound connectors that I'm going to have to drop that into my competition Glock 19. Competition gun only, folks. Competition gun only. He had his slide reworked to have some front cocking serrations put on it. That I might forego that. I don't really see, for competition purposes, I don't see a huge need for doing that and having my slide reworked and all that. I am probably going to get rid of the speed sights that's on the particular Glock I'm talking about. I like speed sights for defensive purposes, but for competition, not so much. This person in the blog, he likes the Larry Vickers sights. And I've actually tried Larry Vickers sights, just dry firing a pistol one time that had those on. They're okay. They're pretty decent. You know, any kind of a good fiber optic, you know, Dawson Precision fiber optic front is good. Warren Savigny makes good sights, especially the Warren Savigny sights for competition or just regular Warren sights. So there are a lot of good ones out there. But I might try the setup that he's got on his. One nice thing about the Larry Vickers rear sight is it's a big, wide U notch. I like the U notch. Now, you know, Trijicon HDs do the same thing, except the front sight's a little bit bigger than a Dawson Precision fiber optic front. So, you know, for competition, you do want to have a thin front sight. And he's got a green light pipe on it. So it's a green fiber optic front. Looks like a pretty good setup. I may actually try that. Because, if I'm not mistaken, the Lipsy's exclusive Glocks that the Larry Vickers exclusives, I think it had those same sights on them. By the way, I'd love to get a hold of one of those Glock 19s with the RTF2 texture. They're just hard to find, and then when you do find one, they're insanely expensive. But if you have a good professional like Chris at Citadel Armory in San Antonio, who's done both of the grip stippling and grip jobs that are on my Glocks. If you have somebody like that do it, you can pretty much achieve the same results as the RTF2 texture. In fact, sometimes even better. So I really like what this guy's done to his Glock. You got to check it out. Go to my Facebook page. There's a real nice picture of it. So I'm going to be slicking out this particular Gen 4 G19 that I own for competition. I have a carry G19 that nothing's been done to it except for a very slight undercut of the trigger guard, very slight, and speed sights. That's it. That's all that's been done to it. Nothing else. Oh, and by the way, for my competition G19, I like to put in there a steel guide rod. A steel guide rod. Stainless steel guide rod. Non-captured. So that I can change spring weights. And I believe this gentleman also has a competition spring kit in his, where you change the weight of the striker spring and you change the weight of the trigger spring. If you put the correct weights in there, it actually lightens the trigger pull a little bit, and I believe even makes it a little bit more crisp and even a little bit better reset, although Glocks have terrific resets already, but they can be improved. The triggers can be improved. And I'll tell you, a lot of people rave about the triggers on some of the other guns out there. Like, for example, I've talked about the great trigger on the Walther PPQ M2. And it is. But, you can, if you know what you're doing, you can make a Glock trigger pretty close to as good as a PPQ M2. If you know what you're doing and you put in the right parts, and you're fastidious about making sure that you have quality parts from quality manufacturers, and you study the stuff, you can make your Glock trigger that good. Now, that's not the factory trigger, so if it's a concealed carry gun, I'm not a really huge fan of really lightening up your concealed carry gun. That's just simply not a good idea, folks. Learn to shoot your carry gun with a duty trigger. All right? You can do it. I've been able to do it. I've trained now for the last three, almost 4 years with a G19 and my duty trigger. In other words, when I say duty trigger, the factory trigger in the gun. Whatever it came with, that's what I shoot. I don't mess with it. What's great is after you give your pistol about a 5,000 round trigger job, those triggers get a whole lot better, let me tell you. you've heard me talk about my 1,000-round trigger job. The 1,000-round trigger job is just a start. That's just the bare minimum. You really need to give it a 5,000-round trigger job. Now you're going to start to notice some real improvements. But I was real impressed with this guy's Glock 19. And again, I'll put it in the show notes so that whenever you look at this episode on your iPhone or Android phone, whatever you're looking at, in the written introduction, you'll see it there. You'll see the name of it and all that, and a direct link to being able to go read the article. Okay, quick break, and I'll get into some more emails. During the break, I want to let you know that when I had lunch with Ben Branham last week, we set up 2017's class schedule. And we're going to start the year in San Antonio, January 21st. We're going to do a one-day class. Ben and I are going to teach pistol fighting dynamics, the art of the first hit. The art of the first hit. Probably the most important hit that you can make in a gunfight if you have to try to save your life is the first one or two or three. And we're going to teach you how to do that with sights and without sights from 3, 5, 7 yards, and we're going to put some other cool techniques in there. So this is not like one of our Beyond Concealed Carry classes. So if you've not taken Pistol Fighting Dynamics, the Art of the First Hit, Ben and I are teaching it Saturday, January 21st at Lone Star Handgun in San Antonio, right outside of San Antonio, northeast of San Antonio. Lone Star Handgun Range. The sign-up link is already on my website, handgunworld.com. Go to the training classes page. We've also confirmed that we're going to Utah next year in May. We're going to Utah. Jason from Concealment Solutions is our official host for that class. So to all of you up there in Utah or in surrounding area, I'm coming to town with Ben Branham, and we're going to teach in Utah. I've been to Utah many times, but it's been a long time. It's probably been over 10 years since I've been to Utah. So we'll be up there in May, and let's see, I think in June, I don't think we have anything set up in June yet. And then in July, we are likely going to be either out at Fort Discovery in Western Washington again. We'll either be out there or we might be someplace up in the Midwest. So keep a lookout for that. June and July of next year have not been completely settled. Oh, I forgot to mention in April we're going to be in Dallas. In April we're going to be in Dallas, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. In August, middle of August, the 12th and 13th. This is going to be a cool event. Ben Branham and I are going to Ohio again, and we're going to teach with Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy. So it's going to be a 3-instructor event, the 12th and 13th. That one's already set up of August next year. And then the end of August, the last weekend in August, we're going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota again. Paul Lathrop is going to be the host of that class. And I'm probably going to be another Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. We are going to be changing up the curriculum a little bit next year. So if you're wondering why you should repeat a class that you've taken with Ben Branham and myself, it's because we're going to be making some changes and introducing some new techniques. I'm sure there'll be more classes coming up besides what I just mentioned. The only one you can sign up for right now is January's class in San Antonio. But I'll be making it, once everything gets a little bit closer to the sign-up time, I'll be talking about all this stuff again and putting the word out there so you'll be able to see when and where and how and all of that good stuff. Many thanks to all of you who have been listening to the show and downloading. The month of August, I set a record for the Handgun World podcast. 69,000 downloads for the month of August. So that's 60. The Handgun World podcast was listened to 69,000 times in August. Now, that's never happened. I think my highest before that was like 56 or 57. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for helping me set records. And I've had over 4 million downloads since I started the show 7 years ago. Over 4 million downloads since my very first episode. You guys are great. I love you. I appreciate you very much. And, oh, and by the way, I had a great month last month. You guys have been supporting me a lot, buying your Amazon purchases through my store, through the Amazon, the Handgun World Podcast Amazon store. That helps me out. When you do that, Amazon pays me a small commission. Just go to handgunworld.com and my Amazon store first. Just go to those two clicks first before you make your Amazon purchases, and then you'll be supporting me. And you don't have to spend any extra money to do that. How cool is that? Okay, I got some more emails to answer. And I did these from the comfort of my office. A gentleman named Chris wrote to me about the episode I did with Paul Lathrop recently. I was the first one to break the news, or at least not really the first one to break the news, but the first one to interview Paul and have him tell his story to the public. He's been on other podcasts before, or actually since then, excuse me. Anyway, Chris writes to me and says, "Bob, it's shocking to hear what Paul went through." But he had a couple questions. He said, "This may be a little into legal territory, but is there any recourse for someone like Paul who was jailed and had to face the legal system? And of course, it was pretty much a false and frivolous case brought against him." So Chris asks, could he sue him in civil court for money that he had to spend and even for emotional distress? And a lot of people have asked that. I've gotten a lot of comments. I got like 14 or 15 comments on that episode when I interviewed Paul Lathrop. Sure, I suppose that Paul would have a civil suit. But if I was in Paul Lathrop's shoes, I'd be tired of the whole thing. I'd be exhausted and just mentally tired of the whole thing. And knowing Paul like I know him, that's probably what he's thinking. You know what? Time to just move on with his life. It was a learning experience. It was a scary one. But time to move on. I guess a little bit. I'm just saying what I would do, and I'm kind of just guessing. Paul himself might send me an email, or he might want to come on and do an interview about that. Maybe we'll make a part two, and after things have settled down and after he's done making the circuit talking about his story, he might want to discuss that some more. But if I was in his shoes, I think I would just leave well enough alone and move on. You know, I'm not a big, I don't know, I kind of feel like going after the other party for a civil lawsuit would be somewhat of a move out of revenge. And I know some of you might be really angry, and of course I was too, really angry about the charges, the false charges that were brought against Paul. And it's human nature to want to try to get revenge, to fire back. But you know, in Romans 12, verse 19, the Bible says, "Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine,' says the Lord." And I'm a man of faith, and I'm not ashamed to talk about my faith, and I'm not afraid to live by it. I'm not speaking for Paul Lathrop, however. Yeah, Paul probably would have a civil lawsuit. It might be kind of tough, though, because he's mentioned that even the state that was bringing charges against him couldn't get this accuser to even show up for court. They had a hard time finding him. Supposedly, they had a hard time locating him. The amount of money and the grief that Paul would probably spend going after this guy would probably be just too much. You have to look at things like this as, what do you have to gain? Now, if this was a case where, you know, a guy went bankrupt and, you know, lost everything he had, then probably, absolutely, there'd be something to gain, because there'd be probably, you know, literally no more to lose. But that's all I can say. I can speculate all I want. Paul knows what he wants to do, or what he's going to do, or if that's something that he would ever be interested in doing, in terms of bringing a civil lawsuit against his false accuser. I'll leave that up to him, but I wanted to bring that topic up. Chris, thank you for the email. I got another email from Scott in Virginia. He was talking about the episode I did regarding the advanced gunfighting class that I took about a month ago through Suarez International, Randy Harris instructor. Great class. Scott says, Bob, I'm glad you enjoyed your training, but I think it defeats the purpose of training if you have two guns with different sights, one for close range and one for precision, unless you're doing a comparison. I think what he was talking about is, I mentioned that I had two Glock 19s. I had one set up with speed sights, and I had the other set up with Trijicon HDs. I started losing the front sight on my Trijicon HDs. They just probably weren't Loctited in well enough. And so Scott thinks that it defeats the purpose. He's got a point there. He's got a point which I agree with. When it comes to training, when it comes to defensive training, pick the gun that you're going to use with the sight setup that you're going to use and the ammo that you're going to use, and train with that and be consistent with that. The reason I brought both and the reason I use both is because I'm still trying to figure out which is going to work best for me. I really like speed sights. I also really like a lot of the Trijicon HD features as well. And Ameriglow Hackathorn sights are pretty good too, with an orange front. So, and I'm still trying to figure out whether the orange front or the green front sight is going to be better for me. So that's why I did that. But in all likelihood, pretty soon here, I'm going to pick one of those, and I'm going to stick with that sight configuration, and that's what's going to go on all of my carry guns. On my Glock 43 recently, I bought Ameriglow Hackathorn sights with a plain black rear and a night sight with an orange painted outline in the front. And that is a really cool setup. Really, really all you need is the front sight to be a night sight. If you train well enough and you've built your skills to the level to where they should be, if you're going to defend yourself with a handgun, the front sight's about all you need for a night sight, in my humble opinion. So I really appreciate you sending me that email, Scott from Virginia. I think that was a good catch there on your part, and a good question that you raised there. Good point that you raised. Thank you. Next, I want to cover an email that I got from Grant. Grant's originally from Scotland. Says he moved to the United States in 2001, and he is in New Jersey. One of Grant's comments here, which I thought was pretty interesting, is he said, let's see here. Let me find it. Oh, yeah. He listened to the episode that Ben Branham and I did recently on becoming a firearms instructor. That was several episodes ago. Ben and I talked about some things. You know, the title of it was, So You Want to Be a Firearms Instructor. And I also did a podcast from the road talking about some of my thoughts on becoming a firearms instructor. Well, Grant has something interesting. He said he is an NRA instructor in New Jersey. And interesting comment, he says, for a state with such mischievous firearms laws, New Jersey has a thriving gun culture and one that's growing particularly fast among 30-something women. I didn't know that, really. So thanks for sharing that. He said Grant says he's smarting over a scathing remark made by a well-known radio and TV host who talks about guns. And he said the guy kind of had a throwaway nature to his delivery. And he said that real instructors would just laugh at somebody if you tell them that you're an NRA instructor or something like that. He said it was kind of paraphrased, but that was pretty close. Okay, I got to comment on that. If somebody says that a, quote, real instructor would just laugh at you if you tell them that you're an NRA instructor, I'd tell them to pound sand. I really would. And I might not be that nice about it, but I keep things clean here on the Handgun World podcast. That's pretty arrogant. That's the height of arrogance there. You know, that is part of the problem with people in our industry, in the firearms industry, especially instructors. A lot of them get really full of themselves. They get pretty arrogant. I try real hard not to do that. And I'm a human being, folks. I have faults. I'm a sinner every day. By the grace of the Lord, I am saved. But let me tell you, I really have to sometimes check myself to make sure that I'm staying grounded and rooted in being a level-headed person and not too full of myself. If you guys ever find that I'm getting too full of myself, would you please tell me? I don't mind. I'm a big boy. I can handle criticism. I've gotten some criticism lately. I'm a big boy. I can handle it. Just tell me. You're doing me a disservice if you don't tell me. So anybody that says that a real instructor is just going to laugh at you if you tell them that you're an NRA certified instructor, yeah, I'd be smarting over that too. Grant says he thinks the role of an NRA instructor is to bring people in or set them on a safe path. Those who have decided to buy a gun or they're about to buy a gun, set them on that straight path, bring them into the culture so that when they go to the range by themselves, they're not only safe but also aware and that they have goals to work towards to improve their shooting. He says if he can do that with about 10 new shooters a month, then that's success. Grant, I agree with you. Man, I agree with you. You know, Grant says when he hears things like, wow, you know, the way you show me to hold the gun is so much better. And I never knew why the slide locks back on an empty mag until now. You know, those are the kinds of things you will hear from new shooters. And there are a lot of new shooters in the gun culture 2.0 these days. There are a lot of new gun owners, a lot of new shooters. That is a good thing. New shooters need that good foundation. NRA instructors give good foundations. Unfortunately, a lot of concealed carry instructors don't. Not all of them. I am a concealed carry instructor. I am a licensed LTC, licensed to carry instructor, certified by the Department of Public Safety in Texas. If you take one of my licensed to carry classes, I'm going to give you that good foundation. But there are a lot of people that don't. You know, recently, one of my good friends and one of my listeners to this show in Houston wanted me to do a license to carry class, private license to carry class for his family. So I did that. There were four or five of us there. It was a private class. And I combined it with about a three-hour lesson after the concealed carry class. So it was a pretty much an all-day class. And I charged him more than the going rate, but I gave him a good foundational lesson as well. And I think that's the greatest value. And by the way, folks, if you're in Texas and you want me to do a private class, send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com, bob@handgunworld.com. I'll try to put something together for you, a private Texas licensed to carry class. I just renewed my instructor certification, so I'm good for several more years now. But Grant, I agree with you. I think I think that that is the role of a good NRA instructor. And I'll tell you what, there are some NRA instructors that are really accomplished folks. They're really accomplished instructors, and I've heard great things about them. So, Grant, first of all, glad you came here. Glad I love his username, Scott Shot Grant from Scotland. That's great. Grant, thanks for the email. Terrific. One of the best emails that I've received in a long time. And well done. All right, just a very quick break, and I'll be right back. Well, that's all. I appreciate all the great emails that have come to me. Keep them coming, and some voicemails, too. Don't forget about my Shooters Club that I've put together with Ben Branham. We have excellent videos, over 60 educational videos for only $8 a month or $75 per year. Well, I think it's time to sign off now. So, thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
And all guns should be Glocks, all Glocks should be 9mm and Model 19. A generation 4 or 3. All guns should be